I think that it's important for emerging thought leaders to just make sure you're clear on what you want. Do you want to be famous and have a really big email list and lots of people following you? Or do you want to be making money? Because sometimes you can have both, but I would choose the money over fame any day.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 129 with podcast matchmaker Jessica Rhodes.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the AOL podcast. Thanks for listening in. I'm your host, JC Preston, and in this session, I'm joined by entrepreneur, coach, author, and speaker, Veronica Kieran. If this is the first time you're listening in, of course, this is a show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Hope you're in a podcasting mood today, because actually today is another look behind the scenes of how podcasting works. And you know, in the past, we've had guests on such as Cole Johnson, who talked about the importance of having great sound. And we spoke about how, you know, we both really had some sound issues when we were starting out in this medium. And, you know, more recently, we had Michael O'Neill on, where he was, you know, he was giving us tons of tips about how he runs his popular podcast. To add to that list today, I have on with me someone that I think was probably one of the first to start helping with a particular need in industry. Podcast and guest matchmaking. Sure, you can find all kinds of potential guests by connecting with them on Facebook or Twitter, but sometimes, you know, the best way to get better results is to leverage the network of someone who already has connections you're looking for. As you'll hear in the conversation with Jessica, she spent a lot of time building her network of not only podcast hosts, but guests as well, and much of which she's done by going to various national conferences and building real relationships there. You know, that's just something that you really can't duplicate straight through social media, as much as you might try. Also in the conversation, we talk about the habits she regularly practices to build this network, how she's built her team and her business, and the benefits of working with a publicist or a booking agent when you're looking to launch your new product. Before we get to that, got to remind you guys about Fizzle. Speaking of building a network, one of the best ways to have real long-term success is building a network of people who are going in the same direction as you. You know, and that way you can support each other through the best and worst times. And as you'll hear in today's conversation, Jessica started meeting people online first, but then was able to meet them in real life. And as you guys might know, Veronica is someone I originally met through Fizzle. She was actually a guest on the show back in session 51, but since then she's become a great asset in my network. And in fact, in October, we're looking to have her come down to the Amplify Indie event to help her promote her upcoming book. And we're actually kind of excited about it. But that being said, you know, what's your network look like? Are they as supportive as you'd like them to be? And if not, why? You know, could it be because you're looking in the wrong places? I've done that myself. If connection is what you want, consider checking out Fizzle. Not only is the community great, but they're constantly taking action with the user in mind. They're adding new courses and getting great deals for their users. So start building your online network today the right way. Don't get lost in the swarms of users looking for handouts on Facebook. You can start your Fizzle membership for free for your first month by visiting newinceptions.com/Fizzle. Again, that's newinceptions.com/F-I-Z-Z-L-E. All right, don't forget to subscribe to the show on CastBox, iTunes, or your favorite podcasting app. If you're listening to the show on iTunes, leave a review and comment, and I'll definitely give you a shout-out. Also, if you're listening on CastBox, leave a comment in there, and I'll strike up a conversation with you. I'd love to hear from you. As usual, show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/129, and I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm JC Preston, your host, and with me today is the amazing Veronica Kieran. Really appreciate you guys being in here with us today. Veronica, how you doing?
Doing well, JC. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Can't complain. A lot of cool things going on here in Indianapolis area. As you know, you're going to be actually coming down, hopefully, to do part of your book review coming up. So
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of awesome things going on.
Yes, I look forward to it.
How's the book going?
Still slogging through the audiobook recording, and that is fine. But on August 1st, we're doing the announcement for the book launch party, and I'm super excited.
Yeah, and there's going to be, I mean, you've already been doing a lot of work already, just getting, you know, everything ready, mm-hmm. let alone what the different phases that you're going to have to go through. It becomes its own job all of itself, let alone the fact that you're, you know, have all these other clients and things that you got to do on the side of that.
Yeah.
But
believe it or not, I'm juggling less than I used to be. So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, so that's helpful. And you can actually take a breather once in a while.
Oh, maybe. So. Oxygen? I don't know what that is.
But one thing that I think that you're well aware of, and I know that many of our listeners are as well, is that, you know, when someone is getting into the thought leadership space, I wouldn't call them competition per se, because a lot of times you want to actually collaborate with other people, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of voices that are out there that are vying for the same space that you are when, you know, you're trying to put your message out there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, social media is the way that they are today. I mean, they're really not, unless you pay to play, they're not that helpful as much as they once were, you know? So, one of the things that a lot of people do is to help them with their marketing so that they can still work on their message and, you know, hone their skills and whatever, is that they'll hire a publicist. And again, that takes a little bit of stress off their back so they can do more of their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, you know, one of the things that I'm sure you're wanting to start thinking about is getting on podcasts like this one. And today's guest, Jessica Rhodes, is all about helping people do just that. She's the founder of Interview Connections, the leading guest booking agency for podcasters and guest experts. And Jessica and her in-house team of booking agents are behind many of the record-breaking book launches that we've heard about recently. And, you know, Jessica herself started podcasting back in 2014 with the launch of her podcast, Rock the Podcast. And today she also co-hosts the podcast Producers and Womensplaining. Of course, you can find out more about her at interviewconnections.com. But Jessica, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I've been looking forward to this one because I know that you offer such an awesome service that really, I mean, it's you're the shortcut to helping people get their name out there. Mm. So,
plus with awesome. A podcast called Womensplaining. I'm just excited to talk to you about that.
Ever since I've added that to my intro, especially when I'm on business podcasts, they're like, and Womensplaining. Okay, what's that about?
Yeah, you're like, yes, let's talk about this. This sounds so good.
Yeah, it's a fun show.
So let's get into it a bit. In today's market, you know, it's becoming, again, even harder to get recognized in the thought space world. And, you know, it seems to me that, you know, at least being in this space, the ratio of experts to followers is shrinking. But, you know, as soon as you step outside of this online entrepreneurial world, you realize that most of the world isn't really as aware of many of us who are in the actual space. Yeah. How did you first become aware of the thought leader industry?
So that's a good question. So I started my business back in 2013 when I had my first child and I wanted to be working from home. And my dad was a business coach. Well, he still is a business coach. But yeah, at the time, he was coaching and getting interviewed on podcasts, also had a great newsletter marketing business, and took me on as a virtual assistant so I could work from home with his grandson. And I started booking him for interviews on podcasts. And that was sort of my first experience meeting thought leaders and discovering this world of entrepreneurship and online entrepreneurs and people that are experts in their own right and all have these followings. And over the years that I've been working with entrepreneurs to book them on podcasts, I realized that doesn't matter how big of a name you have, everyone is a thought leader to a specific group of people. So it's super interesting because, you know, when my email list was like 200 people, I had reached a goal of having a six-figure business. And I've got people that, you know, have met me at conferences and been like, oh my gosh, like I listened to your show. And so it doesn't matter like if you're a big celebrity, it's all subjective.
Yeah.
So being a thought leader, I mean, it's really anyone can be a thought leader, because if you've got five people that are hanging on your every word and are going to be influenced by something you say, like you're an influencer, you're a thought leader. So I think if you, instead of, you know, focusing and looking at all the other thought leaders, just focusing on the people that are listening to your thoughts, and you know, that's how you can really have a lot of influence, if that makes
sense. You're making me feel so good. Like, just for you to say, like, I had 200 people on my email list, but a six-figure business. There are so many marketers out there who are harping on email lists right now. You have to have a big, giant email list. You got to do tell-it summits. You got to be building, and you're hustling for numbers all the time. And I think that you probably align with me in that you didn't start a business because you wanted to hustle for numbers. You started a business because you love people and you're interested in what people are doing and helping them amplify that.
Veronica, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I think that people, a lot of entrepreneurs that are starting and growing, they get really caught up on the advice of how to grow a big email list and to grow social media following. And I coach with Allie Brown, is my business coach, and she talks a lot about like, are you going to focus on fame or fortune? And for me, I want to grow a successful business. I want to have a great income to support me and my family. I want to have a great revenue, you know, great revenue to provide great jobs for my employees. Like, I don't really care about being famous. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people, I think that it's important for emerging thought leaders to just make sure you're clear on what you want. Do you want to be famous and have a really big email list and lots of people following you? Or do you want to be making money? Because sometimes you can have both, but I would choose the money over fame anytime.
Yeah. Well, and often you need the money in order to further, you know, any sort of exposure in the first place. So
yeah, I'll never forget. I went to the Social Media Marketing World Conference. This was several years ago. And I'll never forget. I was watching Chris Brogan speak, and he's very well known, absolutely a thought leader. And at that time, and I don't remember what year this was, he goes, I did not make payroll last month.
Whoa!
You know, and everyone is hanging on his every word. And he's like, I didn't make payroll last month. And so ever since I heard that, I was like, well, shoot, I don't care how famous someone is. I want to listen to people that like are making money in their business. And, and not to like crap on Chris Brogan. Like, I think he's really amazing and he's very smart. I just use that as an example.
Yeah, right.
And he was using that as an example to say like, listen, like, you know, look at your numbers and don't get caught up in how many followers you have and how famous you are. Like, make sure you're looking at your P&L report, make sure you're looking at what you're investing in and are you going to get a return on that investment?
Yeah.
And just being a smart business person.
Mm. So you said that your dad was a business coach. How did you first realize that you had a specific talent, a specific niche that others would actually pay for?
So my dad offered me this opportunity to be a virtual assistant for him. I mean, number one, because he wanted to help me work from home because he had that, had that grandson coming, and he's like, oh, I think it'd be great if my daughter could work from home. So I'll give her this opportunity. But he goes, I'm only going to keep you on. You know, I'm only going to keep helping you if you are, you know, doing a good job and showing results. And I have a lot of experience in door-to-door canvassing. I worked for a nonprofit, did door-to-door fundraising. So I'm very, very good salesperson. Really? For who?
Clean Water Action.
My God, me too. I swear to God. Yes. Holy. Wait, so what office did you work for?
In Ann Arbor, Michigan. So we're focused on the Great Lakes over here.
I started in the Philadelphia office and I was a canvas director in Providence.
Oh my God.
That's so funny.
JC was like, you and Jessica, Veronica, like, this is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
I guess my God. Yeah. My business partner, Margie, I met her. I hired her as a canvasser when we were, because I did this through college and right out of college. Mm-hmm. I'm 30 now. So mm-hmm. I did this, you know, from age 19 to 23. And so I left because I was pregnant and I was like, well, I don't want to be canvas directing and going door to door.
Right.
When I'm pregnant. So that's, oh my God, that's so funny. This is not the first time I've met like another entrepreneur who also was a canvasser. The skills you get going door to door are mm-hmm. the best skills in the entire world. It has made me such a good salesperson.
This is hysterical.
Wow. Okay. Back on track. So yeah, so I was a canvasser, went door to door. So part of that, my dad was like, well, you know, you'd be really good at getting me on podcasts because it's really, it's like door-to-door canvassing, but you're, you know, emailing and calling and making a pitch. So that's how I started. And I forgot the original question because I'm so excited that you're a canvasser.
So basically, he kind of promoted you from being a VA to actually specifically working on getting him onto podcasts.
So, yeah, I mean, that was really one of this tasks that I was doing as a VA. So I remember what you were asking about how we could kind of figure it out. So I was getting him on podcasts and it was going well. He saw that it was, you know, showing results with him on interviews. So he told a couple of his other friends that are entrepreneurs that, hey, you know, my daughter Jessica is building up this virtual assistant business and she, you know, can get you on podcasts. So I took on a couple other clients, helping them do that. And I was doing some other things too. I was doing Pinterest marketing at the time, designing some infographics. So traditional VA, doing a couple different things. And after about 3 or 4 months of pitching and booking interviews, of course, I started to meet these podcasters and talk to them. And I was like, you know what? I want to be able to scale my business. I can't just keep charging $15 an hour as a contract virtual assistant. And like, that's not going to work. Like, I'm not going to make very much money doing that. So I talked it over with my dad and I was like, I want to make more money. I want to really grow a business. And so we looked at all the tasks that I was doing as a VA, designing infographics, which I could charge like a flat rate for, doing Pinterest marketing, which I was charging like, oh, I'll work for your account 12 hours a month, something like that. And I was like, well, I really like booking podcast interviews. People are always so excited to get booked on a podcast. It's like, ooh, I'm being featured. Like there's some ego there, but there's also great results in their business because they're getting in front of new followers and things like that. And so I actually, I reached out to some podcasters that I had booked my clients for, booked my clients on their show. And I was like, hey, can I have a call with you? And I had calls where I said, I'm thinking about starting a business where I book people for podcast interviews. Is that something that you would pay for? And they were like, yeah, I think it's awesome. And I was like, well, what would you pay for that? So I did some initial market research and some of the people that I had built a relationship with by booking my clients on their podcast, I just asked them straight up, like, would you pay for this? And when I started Interview Connections, the first service I offered was just for hosts. So for a while, I was only having hosts pay me to find their guests. And then after a while, I launched the flip side of the service where then I was getting people booked on shows. And it was nerve-wracking because I knew I wanted to guarantee the bookings because if I couldn't guarantee it, people I don't think would sign up. And then as I grew my team, I started hiring my own virtual assistants to help me book the interviews because it got to a point where I couldn't do it all myself.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just grown from there.
Awesome. And congratulations, really. That's cool.
Thank you.
So kind of changing gears a little bit. When we're talking about the podcast industry, I want to say that when I pay attention to new names, it's most often because I've heard their name on a podcast or they were on a podcast as a guest and or maybe they were on the radio. And, you know, that said, we're in a world that seems to be video oriented, short videos in particular. They're just, you just see them everywhere, especially with everybody going to live streaming in the last couple of years. Podcasts, though, they're still hanging around, doing well. What do you think that is? What are some of the advantages that you know, more traditional audio formats have, and why should people still consider even being part of them still?
So I think podcasts are continuing to grow. I see them continuing to grow because more and more like celebrities and bigger name companies are investing in them. Mm. And so they're really becoming more legitimate and credible. Mm. One of my favorite podcasts is called The Armchair Expert, hosted by the actor Dax Shepard. And so he, of course, interviews like major Hollywood, you know, celebrities and actors. And he interviewed the actress Mila Kunis. And she's like, I've never done a podcast before. This is my first podcast. And I think that is really because like major celebrities that will only go like on very big media outlets for a long time, they've been like, why would I go on a podcast? Mm-hmm. You know, 100 people listening kind of
thing. Right.
Like it just didn't seem like a credible media source. But now the more people that are hosting podcasts, especially these bigger names, it's making it more legitimate and more credible. So more and more people are seeing this as a legitimate opportunity to get exposure. Also, the benefits of podcasts and being a guest on podcasts go beyond the benefits that you see from traditional media coverage and being on the radio or the news, because it comes, a lot of the benefits come from the relationship you have with the host and the connection you make there. Like if I walk away from this podcast interview having a great connection with Veronica, and maybe I like we work together, like this is a successful interview for me, even if it never goes live, because now we have this new relationship and this new connection. And
yeah.
And so it's awesome. And a lot of my clients, it's the same thing. My client, Tanya Connor Green, is a business coach, and we've been booking her for interviews for like 8 months now. And in the first few months, most of the interviews had not gone live yet because, you know, it takes time to get scheduled and recorded and to go live. But one of the hosts that interviewed her in the first couple of months had become a coaching client of hers. She's like, wow, this is a great interview. You really know a lot. Like, I'd like to work with you. And so she got this great return on her investment and saw all these results from the interviews just because she had a great connection with the host. And so people, I think that podcasts are continuing to be popular and be an effective marketing strategy, because when you focus on the relationship you have with the person you're talking with, a lot can come out of that.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest lessons when I had a podcast for about 5 minutes, was that to focus on that relationship. Mm-hmm. That like, don't worry about the market. I mean, obviously worry about the marketing. You want the interview guests to feel like it was worth their while, et cetera. But it becomes amplified when there's charisma, when there's a good connection. Like the listeners get into that connection then, and they feel like they're right there with us.
Yeah, very good point. And it's also like super important not to get caught up in, you know, the size, because we, you know, especially when you follow big thought leaders and people that talk a lot about their audience size and their download stats and everything, you know, you feel like, oh God, I can't even compare to that. Like, how am I possibly going to get to that point? But it's not even the point. Like, you don't even have to build your audience to the point where it compares to, you know, one of these bigger names. Like, you just have to focus on the people following you, and deliver good, valuable content to them, because you don't need a lot of people following you to have a successful business. You know, if you're charging a good amount for your service and you have a decent conversion rate, like, it doesn't take that much to be successful with your show and your business.
Right.
Have you read the book Tribes by Seth Godin?
No, I haven't.
You're reminding me a lot of what he says in that book, where like, you've got your following, they're your people, like, be with them, focus on them, nurture them, all will be well, totally. All will fall into place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the biggest pitfalls that you can have in life, really, but I learned this, I did the Landmark curriculum. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Landmark Forum, but it's like a personal development, self-growth thing. And they teach there, like, one of the biggest pitfalls you can have on this journey is comparing yourself to other people. And I think that's so true. Like in anything that you're doing, if you look over, look left, look right, if you're comparing yourself to somebody else, it's a huge pitfall.
You'll
never compare.
Yeah. Well, but it's natural for humans to do that because they want to see if
know,
something's wrong with them or something. So.
Oh yeah, I still compare myself. Don't get me wrong.
So, you know, one of the things obviously that over the years that you've been doing this, I mean, you've been doing this for a while, you've really become connected. What are some of the tactics and or habits that you practice that, you know, from the beginning of your career that you got, you planted the seeds of your network, and do you still actually employ some of those habits today?
So, I mean, one big thing, I have just been super active on social media. I mean, sometimes more than others. You know, we all go through phases where sometimes I'm like, I don't feel like talking to anyone on social media. Mm-hmm. But pretty consistently, I mean, that was definitely from the beginning. I'm like, okay, I got to get in some Facebook groups. You know, I got to like comment, like, you know, just kind of being online and just being active because that's really how you meet people. But then the connections that you make online, they really come to life when you go and meet these people in person. Mm-hmm. And so going to conferences several times a year has been crucial for my relationships, because almost every single person who I can think of that refers people to my company or just is a really great connection, I probably have met them online, but then it was when we met each other in person where we really deepened that relationship and just really grew. So it's definitely going to conferences consistently and really investing that way has been great. And it's hard because you can't be everywhere and you can't go to every conference. I mean, this year we had a scheduling conflict and we're missing Podcast Movement. And, you know, people were like, oh my God, I can't believe you're not going. And it's like, well, you know, like, sometimes, you know, you can't do everything, but going to as many conferences that make the most sense to you too,
right,
is really helpful. And just being, you know, just give a lot of value. I feel like that's a phrase. I almost don't want to say that because everyone's like, give value, be a giver. But really, like, just giving value and not expecting anything in return is really key. I think that's important because a lot of people, they're like, they want to give something, but then they're like, well, what am I going to get in return? And when I work with clients in my company and they just want to give and they're not expecting a client in return, they have the most success. It's the people that go into a marketing strategy where they're like, well, I'll give this free value, but how am I going to get an ROI? How am I going to get a new client out of it? And it's like, that mindset's not going to work because you're coming at it with desperation. And Veronica, I don't know if you remember back in the canvassing days, but did they talk about having dollar signs in your eyes when you're canvassing?
Probably. I know what you mean though, like the kind of like that like hungry look as opposed to like, yes, I'm actually here doing something and I want you to join me. Like, let's just have a conversation about why we want to, you know, not poison our water.
Exactly. And that's what we talked about that a lot at Clean Water, is like when you really needed your quota, your fundraising quota, and it looked like you had dollar signs in your eyes. You were so desperate for them to give you a donation. And it's the same thing with, you know, building relationship. When you meet people, like if you're so desperate for what they can do for you, they're not going to want to help you at all.
Right. No, you're right.
That's so cool. Actually brought up a couple of things to mind. For one, you were talking about going to events and it's just being in real contact with people. One of the things that I'm involved with here, started by Harrison Painter, who's my other co-host, is Amplify. That's why we were chuckling about Amplify earlier. But the thing is that you're completely right. It's like, you know, you can even if you're in your own town, and kind of, and you know, Veronica can tell you, it depends on what town you're in, but you know, you can make really great relationships whether or not you go to conferences or you go to events within your city, especially if your city is, you know, more abundant thinking, I guess you could say. And yeah,
absolutely.
And the other thing that came to mind, and this is a good segue of to where we're going with the conversation, but when Michael O'Neill was on the show, he was talking about the fact that people need to entertain first before they bring value. Because when they bring value first, it almost seems like you're kind of being needy, or there's no way of keeping the people engaged with you. If you don't have that initial engagement with the entertainment, then they're not going to be paying attention to the value.
Right.
I agree with that completely. Yeah, I think that especially with business podcasting, like, we do get really caught up with, like, I need to teach information. And then, like, all that personality that we have just gets sucked away. And I think it's so important not to, like, that's honestly one of the reasons that my business partner, Margie, and I, we started the Women's Planning podcast, is, like, we were like, we want a podcast where we can have a lot of fun and, like, totally loosen up. And when I brought Margie on as a co-host of Rock the Podcast, like, we just got way more chill with it. Like, we have more kind of banter and small talk, just made it more entertaining. And it was interesting because we have got people that were like, it's so much more fun now and they like it and they can hear our personalities. So that way, when they see us at conferences and stuff and we see people in person, our personality matches what they hear on the show, rather than being like, you know, having a show where it's real buttoned up and we're just teaching. And then they see us and we're like really fun in person. So I think, and that can be hard to do. It takes time to learn to get your personality on camera or on your podcast to match who you are. So it's easier said than done. But over time, I think that's got to be the goal, is to get to a point where how you are in your quote unquote marketing and your podcast and everything, it matches what people get when they see you in person.
Yeah. We've been trained to kind of like button up and sit up straight in business. I struggled with that a lot when I first started my business in 2012, where I was like, I have to act a certain way and be a certain way in order to be a leader and get taken seriously. And plus, you know, I was in my mid 20s and a young woman and running a tech company, and it was a recession. So, you know, but that I felt like I had to wear pencil skirts and high heels and act a certain way. And then I would run into a client outside of work, and I would like have this conflict of like, how do I act right now? Because I'm out and I'm having fun and I want to smile, but I feel like I can't, I have to act.
Totally.
Way.
I can relate to that. I started my business when I was, I guess I was 25. Cause that's, I guess when I had my son, I was 25. And like, my dad was my business coach. So my dad's like, you know, a middle-aged like man and like a little bit more conservative than me. So I just like followed his lead. And when the first couple conferences that I went to, I just tagged along to some marketing conferences that he was going to. And I was like, and it's so funny because I like look back at pictures. I'm in like a gray blazer. I looked like so boring, but I didn't know because I was coming out of working at Clean Water Action. What am I going to do? Wear jeans and a t-shirt? No, you know, I got to look professional. And then it took some time for me to learn like, wait a second, I can be successful in my business and not look like I belong like at a bank, you know, like I can actually wear like an orange polka dot dress, or like I can like be like have fun with my clothes and be myself. You know, I don't have to dress professionally. Like,
Yeah. I can be successful, not my personality that I project.
Well, and that completely brings up another topic. I mean, it's, you know, when people are talking about being professional versus personal, right? And really, I mean, when you get on LinkedIn, right? What's the difference between the people's profiles on there versus, say, on Facebook? Right. I mean, it's and the thing is that I think that the more successful ones that you see on LinkedIn are the more real people. But for the again, majority of the people are just missing out. And it just like, do I want to work with this stale person or this person that actually looks like, you know, they're fun? So
it's so funny. Yeah. The whole social media conversation is so interesting, like kind of how you portray yourself, like what you put out on different platforms is different. And I think that makes sense, you know, that there's a purpose to LinkedIn, there's a purpose to Facebook, there's a purpose to Instagram. But yeah, I think just being authentic and just being okay with that. And I think like one thing that I did learn early on, reading books by like Dan Kennedy, you know, you want to magnetically attract, and I forgot what the other word is, like you really want to attract people and repel people. And I think if you're being super authentic and you're being yourself, then there are going to be people that are like, nope, don't want to work with you. But on the flip side, there's going to be people that freaking love you and hang on every word you say. Right. Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt like I got to that point. And of course, I don't like have a lot of haters or anything, but I have had people that are like, I wouldn't work with you because of that. And I'm like, cool. Have a nice day.
Yeah. But,
you know, and so I think that if you're trying, it's like goes to the saying, like, if you try to please everyone, you'll please no one.
Yeah.
No way. Right. And plus you'll be miserable working with somebody who doesn't like your personality.
Right. Exactly.
So one more thing before it's Veronica's turn, and she has so many questions. She's like, holding it in
don't
right now. That's a problem.
Don't set me up.
But you know, one of the things that I've heard is somewhat of a theme of what you're talking about is that you know you're a huge team builder. Not only do you employ, you know, you have your team for interview connections, but I would imagine because you have multiple shows that you also have a team for your podcasting. You know, and I would say that a lot of thought leaders that have kind of gone past the Mach 1 point, you know, those people probably have some team in their business as well. Mm-hmm. So my question, how did you actually build that team? I mean, was it organic? Did you just pick when you needed someone right then? Or did you pick someone before you thought you needed someone so that you could actually, you know, get that, have them do something that they are naturally good at so you wouldn't be blindsided by stuff that you weren't already working on, if that makes sense?
Yeah, this is a great topic and definitely something I've talked about a lot because we are a very labor intensive business, which means we need a team. And so for the first several years of the business, I had a virtual team. My guest bookers were contractors and worked all over the country working from home. And so I would just find them through like referral or through like Elance.com, which I think is Upwork now, but you know, I would just find them online. They'd be virtual. Essentially they were 1099. So super easy to onboard them. And then if it didn't work out, it was like, okay, don't need you anymore. 2017 came along. We got to the point where I was like, I can't keep having contractors because, you know, you can't schedule their hours. If they want to take time off, like there's just a lot less control that you have with contractors that, you know, you just can't control them as much and how they do things and when they work, all that good stuff. Yeah. So I hired my business partner, Margie. She was actually my first employee. So I hired her to at least have somebody that I could have full time, like helping me manage the business. And then a few months into 2017, I said, okay, Margie, all of our bookers need to be employees. We cannot keep growing with contract labor. It's not sustainable. It's not sturdy enough. So we made that transition and we left the model of having virtual contractors all over the country and we went local and we hired W-2 employees. And so 2017 was definitely the hardest year of business we've ever had because hiring employees, as the business is growing, mind you, it's not like we could shut things down and say, hey, we're under construction and we'll reopen next month. Like we had to swiftly transition and like, thank God for Margie. I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have her there helping me through that whole transition. But yeah, so we hired people locally. We found people through like Craigslist and Indeed. Two of my contract bookers were local, so I made them employees. And just, you know, built from there. And it is a long process. And I kind of reacted to the question first, like, oh boy, because it is not something that is overnight. It took, you know, years and years of trying new systems and like creating new spreadsheets and ways of using the different CRMs and project managements. Like we've tested so many things and we've got a really good system, but it's like, it is... Some, you know, building a team and having the systems, like it takes just a long time. It's a lot of testing. And, you know, I've hired some people that were nightmares and I've had employees that are amazing and make my life super easy. And we've got a really good team right now. Like Margie and I will sit back sometimes and be like, God, our team is just great right now. Like I feel like we've really paid our dues with all like the hiring and managing and training and all that stuff. But I did take a course. I mean, you know, leadership and team building and everything is something that I studied that in college. I studied leadership and communication, organizational communication. I went to Temple University. So I do have like actual education in this area, and also like working at Clean Water Action, hiring. Mm-hmm. I hired a lot, hired and fired a lot of people, because when you manage a door-to-door canvas, you're hiring and firing a lot of people. So I come to that area with a lot of experience. But then with my own business, it's like when I worked at Clean Water Action, there were all these systems already in place. There was a whole HR department. There were all the forms and everything. And it's like, as I went, you know, the first time I had to fire someone in my own business, I'm like, wait a second, I don't know how to do this, because you don't want to get sued for wrongfully terminating someone. So I'm calling up my HR person, like, what do I do? She goes, okay, like, you have to have their last paycheck prepared before you let them go, like all that stuff. So there is just a lot of learning.
Yeah.
But, you know, once you figure each step out, it's like, oh, okay, the second person I had to let go, I'm like, all right, I know what to do now.
Yeah. I know so much about what you went through.
Yeah, it's what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. I am very strong.
Yeah, and now we know everything.
We know everything. We're so much more experienced now. Yeah, but I mean, I love having a team. It's so great. And it's like, you know, we've built this business to the point now where our booking agents serve our clients. And for a long time, like, I was still pitching. I mean, even this time last year, like, I would, you know, we'd be up behind and I would be there pitching and I was getting the clients booked. And now I do sales and marketing. Like, that is what I do. And like, Margie will even say, like, nope, go do sales calls. Like, I've got this, like, you know, running the team meetings and stuff like that. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about the consumer end of what you are doing with regards to book launches. You know, I have a book launch coming up. Podcasting, cool. Etc. So, to segue into that, you know, as an example, Pat Flynn launched Blah. Oh gosh, JC.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's so easy, isn't it?
So we all know who Pat Flynn is. Okay, so Pat Flynn, that's the guy I'm about to talk about. He wrote a book called Will It Fly? Okay, so that's out now. But so he, in order to market it, he did a big podcast run and he sent a video of himself talking about his book to his podcast buddies and just said like, hey, I have this thing. Do you want to talk about it on your podcast? Does that work? But he had that network already set up for himself. You know, a lot of people who are launching their first books don't have a wide network of podcast friends or video friends to be able to do that. So, for someone who is in the latter group, what should a thought leader do to start planning their podcast tour, and even when should they start planning their podcast tour in order to promote a new book?
I recommend starting to plan it at least 4 months before your book launches.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time for interviews to get booked, for interviews to get recorded. I mean, this podcast we booked 3 months ago, so that's just one example, and that's not unusual. A lot of podcasts, you know, they're not scheduling right away. And you want to be planning ahead enough so that you have the flexibility, because, you know, Pat Flynn is extremely well known. He's got a lot of friends. People would love to have him on the show. He's got great name recognition. Most people don't have that. So you don't want to go to your book launch. Like, you don't want to go on this podcast or being like, hey, I've got this book coming out. I'd love talking about it on your show. Most people are going to be like, yeah. Like, that's not going to fly with them.
Right. Why does my audience care?
You want to communicate the value. And honestly, I mean, not to be self-serving, but like, I do recommend working with a booking agency that can represent you, because, I mean, launching a book is a lot of work. Writing a book is a lot of work. And working with a booking agency, they've got connections existing. They can strategize with you on the right way to position yourself. Not to mention, when you are pitching yourself, the positioning is not great if you're the one pitching yourself. You know, you want to show, like, I've got a team, I've got an agent, I've got a publicist. Like, podcast hosts will see that and be like, wow, like, she's successful. She's got a team. She's investing in this launch. She's not trying to bootstrap and, like, do it all herself. I mean, I recommend working with an agency who can work with you on that, use their connections. I would start at least 4 months before your book launch. And if your book launch is less than 4 months away, start now.
Yeah, that's actually, I've been told over and over about 3 or 4 months out to start planning. So if somebody does need to do it on their own, if they're a thought leader and they're saying, okay, I've got a book coming out, or if they got, you know, they have something that they're launching, And they have to do it on their own. What would you suggest that they start doing in order to garner some publicity?
Yeah, so I would recommend getting a one sheet created. Mm-hmm. So write a bio, something that's in third person, so the host can easily read it and learn about you and what you do, what your story is. And that they could also use that as an intro to the show.
Yeah.
And then also write out some interview topics. So some bullet pointed topics that you could talk about on a podcast and some suggested interview questions. And you want to put this on a one sheet, a branded PDF doc that has your bio. It's just use a designer, have that created. Mm-hmm. And then when you are finding and emailing podcast hosts who, you know, you want to be on their show, you attach that one sheet to your pitch. And in your pitch, you write an email that says, this is what I could talk about on your show. You don't want to have like a scripted template that you send to a million different podcast hosts. You want to really customize each pitch so they can see, because I've been pitched, you know, I have a podcast about podcasting and I've been pitched topics that are so irrelevant to my show that I'm like, you didn't even research it.
Right.
So you definitely want to take the time to research and really get to know what a podcast is about. And then like listen to one of their more recent episodes, because a lot of podcasters will change their focus, but they don't update the description on iTunes. So you read the description and you're like, oh, this is great. But then you realize for the last 10 episodes, they've been talking about something else.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to read their website, the description, and then also listen to some of their episodes to really learn. Because a lot of hosts will even talk on the show. They're like, yeah, this podcast is for this kind of person. So by listening, you can get a lot of great insight.
Yeah.
And you can reference like, hey, listen to your latest episode and I love blah, blah, blah. Like, so you can show specifically that you've done your research.
Yeah, you can flatter them and, you know. I even like the idea of looking at followers' comments, if there's some recent comments, because you'll start to get an idea of what the audience is taking away from that podcast too. Because mm-hmm. I'm sure that you can confirm this, that podcasters really, really care about their audiences. That's who they're serving.
Oh, completely. Yeah, you definitely want to communicate how your topic and what you can teach will serve the audience.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to hire either a booking agency or a publicist, but they're not sure how to even start that and they're trying to budget for it, they might have a bootstrap budget. How much would you say that they ought to plan for so that they can start, you know, say they're like 6 months ahead, so they know in a couple months they're going to have to do this. How can they budget for that? What should they plan on?
Yeah, so for a launch, I would budget at least $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
You're the expert. Excuse me. Okay. I'm in the thick of it. So I'm like, oh yeah, that's like pretty much like everything that I've been hearing when I've been researching.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's pretty standard. And I mean, that's sort of like as of right now, like that's around what you would spend on like one of our packages of bookings. And it can go up from there depending on how many interviews you want to do. And from what I hear from people that have worked with traditional like publicists, PR agencies that are doing, we just do podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
From what I hear from people who have worked with PR agencies, that's like very inexpensive, like compared to traditional PR, that's pretty inexpensive. So yeah, PR, getting booked, like it's not cheap because you're paying, you know, you're not paying an assistant for their time. It's paying for the connections that they've really garnered and have built over many, many years. So you're, by working with a publicist or an agent, you're on the fast track because you don't have to start and grow these relationships. You can just kind of piggyback on the work that they've been doing for many years.
Yeah, it's so valuable too. It's so valuable. So when somebody comes to you and they say, okay, like, I need somebody to do some booking for me. I need to figure out how to get onto the podcast circuit. What does that process look like when they first reach out to you?
Yeah, so when they first reach out to us, we have a process where we first schedule a call. So my business partner will be the first person that they email, and then she'll take a little look at the website, see what you've got going on. If it looks like we're able to help you, she'll schedule a call for you to meet with me. And I have a 30-minute call before we sign you up or anything. We have a 30-minute chat where I can learn about your business, about your goals. I really just want to get to know you and what you've got going on, because it's a two-way street. I want to make sure that, you know, we can serve you and that you're a good fit for our agency. And I want you to make sure that we are the right fit for you too, because we want to work really well with our clients. And also we want you to work with an agency that you feel good about working with. So we'll talk for 30 minutes, talk about you. We'll talk about how we work and figure out what level of investment is a good, good route for you. Uh-huh. And then once you get started and make your investment, we go through a whole discovery process and really strategize, get to know your story. We have, again, our in-house booking agents. You'll be assigned to a team of agents that will learn about you, help you figure out. We'll do the whole one sheet copy and design, and you'll approve of all of the shows that you book. So you're very involved in the process, but we're doing all the legwork.
Yeah. Yes. And it's personally, whenever I've been in a discovery process with any sort of agency, it always feels so good to be taken care of. So like the agencies that do their work really well, it's like, yes, like it just, it's like such a relief to say, okay, here's the stuff. You guys can go do it.
Exactly. It's really, it's nice. Like, and I totally get what an investment is. I've made really big investments in my business, and I totally understand that feeling of like, okay, like I know this is a good idea. Like we just invested in tax planning with our accountant. Woo-hoo. It was like a $5,000 investment, and we're like, tax planning is one of those things that unless you're an accountant, you know, you're like, I know that I should do this, but I don't know why until I do it. Uh-huh. And so I just want to say that, because like I get that investing in something like this is like, whew, it can feel like a stretch at first, and it is so nice to be like, once you jump in, like the water's warm. You're like, oh man, this is awesome. Yes. Like I'm getting taken care of. I'm
so worth it. At least you should feel that way. So that there's a red flag marker maybe. Is there anything that you would suggest, like mile markers or milestones that somebody should have hit in their company or in their work that they're bringing to you before they engage with you? So things that like maybe they need to have together before they're ready to work with you or another booking agency.
Sure. Yeah. So really basically, I mean, you should have a website. Yes.
Agreed.
Yes. You should have a website, some type of online presence. Because if you don't have a website, like there's really nothing to show a podcaster. And then the other thing, like that's the real basic, like tangible thing. And the other thing is podcast interviews, investing in raising your brand awareness. Raising your brand awareness is not a strategy that brings you immediate clients. So for example, I'm running LinkedIn ads right now for Interview Connections. And the call to action is for people to schedule a call with me. I'm investing in LinkedIn ads because I want people to become a client. Like that's an immediate ROI that I need to see for that strategy to work. When you get booked on podcasts, when you invest in your media, like, you know, raising your brand awareness, getting media coverage, building relationships, that's not a strategy that you can expect an immediate ROI from financially. You can't expect people to sign up and become a client right after you do one interview. So I describe that to say that if you're in a place in your business where for you to make a $5,000 investment, you need to immediately see that ROI within a few months, then you're not ready to do it. Because when you invest in your brand building, you have to be okay with the fact that it's going to take a lot of time for your, you know, for that strategy to ultimately pay off. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I have a lot of clients that see an immediate financial ROI from interviews pretty quickly, but you can't be in this cash-strapped mode of like, oh my God, I need to get new clients like really fast.
Yeah. So you're doing some tax planning. What else do you think is going to happen for you this year? What's the future hold?
Well, we have a very exciting fall. So travel schedule. So we have, I mentioned we coach with Allie Brown. So we're in her premier group. So we have our premier group mastermind meeting. She also does an event called Iconic. So we're going there. We are also, we are very big in Salt Lake City, believe it or not. We've got a lot. we have a lot of clients.
I used to live there.
I've never been.
Such a great city. I love it.
I can't wait. So we just happen to have a lot of clients there. Actually, AJ Wilcox, who's doing our LinkedIn ads, and he's awesome, by the way. And first of all, I just want to point out that we've been running our LinkedIn ads for a week and a half, and they're performing very well. So AJ Wilcox, b2linked.com, he'll hook you up with some great LinkedIn ads. Anyway, awesome. He's one of our top referrers, and he's in Utah. And so over the years, we just have gotten so many clients in Salt Lake City. So we're speaking at this like local marketing event in Salt Lake City, like on some random Wednesday night in October. That's so great. We have that happening. And yeah, we're also going to FinCon, which is a marketing conference for the financial industry. So we cool. just have a very busy travel schedule to, you know, raise that brand.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, AJ was on a couple of sessions ago, and I'll be sure to have his episode in the show notes. Just if anybody wants to look into doing ads on LinkedIn, because it's a much different beast than doing Facebook ads, that's for sure.
You know, the thing I love about AJ is that, and he's been our client for years, so when we came to him and we're like, hey, AJ, we want to run LinkedIn ads, and so you're definitely the person that we want to help us with that. He's such an honest person that he'll really tell you if he doesn't think that LinkedIn ads are a good fit for your business, he will not like try to sign you up, which I just really respect when people are super honest like that.
So yeah. And you'll get a lot out of that from the conversation, because he really dumped a lot of information that should be able to tell you whether or not that you want to do that or not. And if so, you know, if you're not technically inclined, there's a good chance that you probably will pick him up as help, because I mean, he's really such his niche that I mean, he was even talking about the fact that when he was trying to learn how to do fake or LinkedIn ads, there was no one out there that was already doing it, you know. So
wow,
he's a pioneer.
Exactly. Wow. So anyway, let's move on to the rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Cool, I'm ready.
All right. First one, it's a little bit of a change up. What's at least one documentary that you'd recommend people check out?
I would recommend the Tony Robbins documentary. I forget what it's called, but I'm sure if you look on Netflix, Tony Robbins, it is a documentary about his Date with Destiny event. And that was super interesting and really motivating.
I Am Not Your Guru is the name of that one.
There you go. Yeah.
That's it. I Am Not Your Guru.
Yeah. If you could have dinner with anyone living or dead, who would it be?
Paul McCartney, The Beatles.
Oh,
so cliche.
No.
Any particular reason?
I just love him. I love The Beatles. That music just brings me so much joy.
Did you hear, speaking of The Beatles, did you hear that they were just replaced by Drake as far as having the top five, the most of singles on the Billboard charts?
Wow.
By Drake, because he just recently released an EP that had like, I don't know how many songs, but he had at least 2 weeks ago, I think it was, he had 27% of the Billboard 100.
That's incredible. Holy that shit. That in my feelings song.
Yeah,
just like in my head all the time.
Yeah, when I heard that, I was like, oh man, that's sad, because you know, again, the Beatles had that record for so long, you know, having good, you know, songs that we all grew up with in the top five.
Yeah,
and yeah, that's anyway.
Okay, so everyone go buy a Beatles album right now.
Exactly, right?
I know.
So let's say you've recently been told that you will be forced to time travel back to January 1st, 1990. You only have a week to prepare, and you'll only have the clothes on your back that you'll be wearing at the time. Oh, what would you do?
So I'm trying. Okay, so I'm trying to think of like what television shows were out. Like, was Full House out yet? Like, I'd probably go try to like watch a live taping of that or something.
Yeah, I think.
Or Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, yeah.
I was born in 1988, so like I'm going back to my childhood shows, and I would probably go out to like Los Angeles and try to meet my favorite childhood celebrities.
Aww, that's cool.
I bet people get way more philosophical than I just did.
What is one thing that you believe all high school students must know?
Personal finance. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. High school students need to learn about money way more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even, you know, we here in Indianapolis, we have an organization called COFFEE, which is Community Outreach for Financial Education. And when someone tells, you know, when someone from that group tells someone in the urban setting that that's what they do, they're like, oh, we need to have you come and talk, because no one knows anything. You know, it's like the blind leading the blind on that topic more often than not. So Yeah, that's cool. So the last question that we're going to ask is in regards to your community, because I know that you're such a big community maker offline and online. How can someone be a difference maker in their community?
I'm going to go real simple on this one and just, you know, have a goal to make someone smile or laugh every day. You know, I think that there's a lot we can do, like, you know, on this bigger scale of like donations and volunteering and like having this big impact. But I think that day to day, like the biggest impact you can have on your community is just to be the person that people like to be around. Be the person that people get positive energy from.
Yeah.
Well, and again, I mean, it's just be positive as opposed to it being a downer. I know it's it's not hard. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Totally.
Well, yeah. Jessica, thank you so much for taking some time with us today. Again, you can be found on interviewconnections.com. Where can people find you on the socials if they want to talk directly to you?
Yeah. So I'm active on Instagram at JessRhodes45 or at Interview Connections. And yeah, Instagram, or go to our website. You can find all the social media links there.
Cool.
Followed.
All right.
Yay.
Boom.
Again, thank you so much for being on, and have a good one. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks.
All right, guys, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed our chat with Jessica today. You know, if you're looking for help to get yourself featured on podcasts, yeah, she's probably the most experienced person I can think of to help with that. One of the things that we briefly mentioned in this conversation was that she has a few shows of her own going on right now. And she also has a YouTube channel where she shares a lot of tips to help us on both sides of the mic as a host and, you know, as potential guests. So in today's show note extras, which can be found at newinceptions.com/129, I have 4 videos to get you introduced to some of the tips that, you know, you can find on there. The first one I thought would be useful for you guys, because many of us think when it comes to writing a book that we essentially have to start from scratch. And while this is partially true, we can use our past work to inspire the content that we're covering. So you'll get to hear how she actually made her book called Interview Connections. And after that, I have another video which was pretty interesting to me and something that I'll probably start implementing soon myself. You know, recently I made a page on New Inceptions that shares the different podcasts I've been a guest on. But this video, you know, it takes it to the next level, really. If you're wanting to be a guest on shows, you know, it might make sense to make a full press page for podcasters to consider. Not only should you post the interviews you've been on there, but perhaps maybe an intro of what you're doing, pictures, and other items. And in this video, she discusses what all should be in on that page. The next video is all about qualifying a podcast before you actually apply to be a guest. Now, many folks don't do this, and as a result, they might find themselves on a show that they're, you know, either not prepared to be on, or the host simply doesn't know how to extract the information that they, you know, the guest would want them to extract from them. And finally, the fourth video is one where she talks about podcasters having their guests jump through hoops to be on the show. And sure, there's a reason why more experienced and popular podcasters might be actually doing this, but are those reasons the reasons why other hosts do it, or are they just trying to take advantage of the guests? So really some really great points in that one. And again, you can find all those videos in the show notes at newinceptions.com/129. So speaking of a session 129, that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening in. Hope you were able to get some good stuff today. In the next session, Harrison joins me again as we speak with Millette Jones. And Millette is actually a do-it-yourself podcast guest host, meaning instead of doing everything for you when it comes to getting you on shows like Jessica, she actually helps people pick and pitch to podcasts on their own. You know, and I got to say, it's a really interesting conversation for those of you who are more of do-it-yourself kind of individuals. So until then, don't forget to check out Fizzle so you can start building online connections with like-minded people. Get your first month free by visiting newinceptions.com/FIZZLE. Again, that's Fizzle. And that being said, guys, thanks so much for joining Veronica, Jessica, and myself today. And until next session, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.